Hey guys, Brian Mendler here. Super excited that my one-day workshop coming to 14 cities open to the public. So if you're an administrator, get a bunch of teachers, send them to these cities. Full days, again, 8:30 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. All sorts of info on your most challenging students. November 13th, we got Sioux Falls. The 14th is Omaha. November 15th is Des Moines, Iowa. Then November 19th, Houston, Texas. Houston, one of my favorite places. I'll be back in Columbus on November 20th and Cleveland, Ohio on the 21st. Then we take a little Thanksgiving break after that. And then after Thanksgiving, we come back North Chicago, Illinois. I'll be there on December 3rd, Joliet, Illinois. If you're anywhere near Joliet, we got you on December 4th. And I'll be in Champaign, the home of the Fighting Illini, on December 5th. Excited for you guys. And then close to my hometown, December 10th, I got Binghamton, New York. December 11th, I'll see you guys in Syracuse. And December 12th in Buffalo. All one-day workshops, register brianmendler.com. Go to brianmendler.com, private message me on Twitter, on Instagram, on any social media sites for large groups, and I'll help you with special pricing. I hope to see you guys there. Hey guys, today's episode brought to you by my subscription service, MendlerU. For just $5 a month, you have unlimited access to my video professional development catalog and library containing over 60 videos and bonus podcasts and segments from every guest that I bring on. Each week, I add new content for the most inspiring, up-to-date strategies and tips for working with your most challenging and difficult students. Visit brianmendler.com right now and subscribe to MendlerU.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Rochester, New York, it's time for the Brian Mendler Show. Introducing your host, fighting for kids everywhere, Brian, that one kid, Mendler.
What is up, everybody? Brian Mendler back in your life on this Monday, November 4th, 2019. And I am super excited today to be joined by my good friend, Lindsay Stumpenhorst from Sterling, Illinois, correct? Are you in Sterling right now?
That is right. Loud and proud, right here at Chalem Middle School.
Where it's snowing, correct?
Where it is actively snowing.
Crazy. Crazy, right?
Yes, yes. Kids are bundled up and needing some probably snow boots that since they've grown a lot over the summer. But yes, it is a bit early to have snow. We had 3 calls this morning already asking if there was school.
Wow. All right. First day, they're already wondering if there's school, and you guys are like, let's go. We're good.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Right, exactly.
Right, good. Well, I'm straight back from Iowa. I spent the last 2 days I was in 2 different places. I was a place called Newton, Iowa, and another place called Colo, Iowa. Ever heard or been to either one of those?
No. I've just driven through. That's it.
So it kind of reminds me of your town in a way, like of Sterling. I mean, small town, kind of USA, you know, like, and my favorite, and I was taught, we spent a lot of time talking about the guest that I had on my podcast last week, Mike, my former student. And, you know, we were talking about the poem that he read, and it was just this reminder for teachers of, you know, the world that some of our kids come from. And, you know, he told the story last week of being 13 years old and having his father basically put him in a van, make him drive the van at the age of 13, while his father and 3 friends were in the back of the van smoking crack at the age of 13. And then my dad tells me to go to the Walmart parking lot. I pull in and I'm trying to do my homework under the light in the van, and I get to school the next day and all anybody cares about is, where's your work? Where he's like, it was 1 in the morning on like a Wednesday. And I'm like, you know, this is the reminder of where some of our kids come from. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget, you know, like I think some people forget the world that some of our kids come from. Do you see any of that where you are?
Yeah. So we're 100% free and reduced lunch because of a USDA grant that we earned because of our high or low socioeconomic status, our high percentage. So every single student qualifies for free breakfast and free lunch. which has been really awesome for our kids.
That is great. So you're at the middle school now. You come from elementary. I'm always curious to know, like, when you go from elementary to middle school. So actually, let's back up from that. Take me through, like, your start in education. Like, where did you come from? What got you into this? What made you into this, like, caring, loving person who just adores kids? Like, where does this come from in your life?
Well, I'll tell you that whenever I told anyone what I was going to do, which is go to school to be a teacher, they would laugh at me. It was something that wasn't on anyone's radar. And so that kind of stirred something inside of me, like, you can't tell me what to do. And so I was determined to be amazing at it. And so I had my first classroom. It was a third grade classroom, and I had no idea what I was doing. I still feel really bad about my first year of teaching. I think to myself, like, dang, I probably sucked. But the kids loved me, and so that was good. So then fast forward a few years, and I got my groove in teaching. I had a really bad experience with a principal.
Wait, what did you teach, though? What did you start at? So what did you...
It was third grade, self-contained. So I had, 28 students all day long. And then I moved to a middle school position. And between those, by choice, I just needed something different. I had been in a third grade classroom for 6 years, was ready for a change, ready for some new challenges, moved to a middle school classroom. And along the way, everyone kept saying, you're going to be a principal someday. You're going to be a principal someday. And I was determined to, again, prove them wrong. Nah, not interested. And then I had a not so good experience with a school administrator. I felt like everything was a gotcha. And even though I'm not perfect, my heart was always in the right place. The intent was there. And so I thought, you know what? I can do better than that. And I'm going to do better than that. And then I signed up for my Ed Leadership program. And here we are now, I suppose.
What about as a kid? So where'd you grow up? Did you grow up in that area?
Yes, I did. I'm a farmer's daughter through and through. Very rural community.
Principal in boots, correct?
Principal in boots. Yes, that is very true. So my dad actually is in the middle of harvest season right now. So he is, like, cursing the weather gods about the snow. But yeah, very rural upbringing. Stay-at-home mom. Two-parent household. Moderate family income. I would say that something, my parents are both amazing people and would give the shirt off their back to a complete stranger without even being asked to do so. But something that has really inspired me is seeing how hard my dad works and that he doesn't set working hours. You work till the job's done. Hmm. And that's kind of the same feeling that I have now in my position as the principal. I don't have set office hours. You won't find me in my office very often, but I'm going to work till the job's done, not until the bell rings.
Where will we find you then if we won't find you in your office? You're, like, really everywhere else, which I think good leaders are, but, like, where do you spend your day, a lot of it? Where do you find yourself?
Where I'm needed. I mean, really, I take the pulse of the school every morning, and that's first thing. We call it activity time. When kids come to school and they congregate in the athletic complex or outside on the blacktop, I take the pulse then and I kind of see where I think the hot spots might be for the day. And then I'm really intentional about going to those places before they come to me. Because if
what
I don't
mean specifically the pulse, like, how do you when so like if someone's listening and they're like, what do you mean exactly by taking the pulse? I get that there's a feel to it, but what exactly are you looking for?
I'm looking for facial expressions, body language, kids who are, huddled together in group, having maybe some conversations that I feel like will lead to something in the future. It's not specific words or phrases. It's a feeling. You can just tell by, I'm actually a communications minor. And so when I went to my undergrad, I did a lot of undergrad training on nonverbal communication. And so when I pick up on those things with my kiddos, I just know that eventually it will lead to a verbal conversation if I don't try and problem solve that first. In the office here, they call me Flash because I'm in and out so fast that they typically just see me as I walk by.
I would think, too, you would be looking, well, I would think for myself, I'd be looking for, like, kids that didn't maybe have anyone, kids that are maybe hanging out alone, kids that kind of look lonely and lost. Do you see any of that? And if you do,
What's your goal there? Like, do you, I think it's nice to try to get some leaders to say, hey, you see that he's kind of standing alone. It'd be cool to bring him in the mix. Do you do that? And how, what kind of response do you get?
Yes, I totally do. And so, actually, we supervise Friday night football games, and there's a whole Chalen Middle School section that's like separated from all of the rest of the visitor stands. And I supervise that every home football game. And so actually just last Friday, I noticed that one of our students was sitting by herself and everyone else had a group of people to sit with. And I think sometimes that it's not that middle schoolers are exclusive. They just don't always see it. And so what I did is I went to a group of girls that I knew were in the same grade, have a few of the similar classes, and really are just kind-hearted people. And I just said, hey, I don't know if you noticed or not, but, you know, so-and-so is sitting by herself. And, you know, if you get a chance and maybe want to either invite her to your group or maybe just sit by her, I'm sure she'd really, you know, be happy about that. And, you know, sure enough, not 2 minutes go by and, you know, they all are congregating around her. She's laughing. They're laughing. I just think awareness, because they don't always see it themselves.
I think awareness is also a factor in misbehavior in class. It's when people look at why kids misbehave, I call awareness. I have six reasons that kids misbehave, and generally severe kids are all six at the same time. And the five main ones are attention, power, control, competence, belonging. But the sixth one is awareness. And awareness kids, I always say, are kids that like tap their pens. And you know an awareness kid in school because when you ask them to stop, they do. And they're genuinely sorry. Like they'll be like, oh, Mr. Mandler, I didn't even realize it. And you're like, no problem. And 30 seconds later, you start teaching and they're tapping their pen again. You know, anytime I see I have an awareness kid, so to speak, in class, I teach teachers to look for props, like go down to a local carpet store, tell them you're a teacher, ask them for the most plush scraps of carpeting that they can find, duct tape them to the kid's desk and let the kid tap on the carpet instead of the desk, because it's not really the pen tapping that drives you crazy. It's the noise from the pen tapping that drives you crazy. And, so props are great. Another one that I saw recently was in a third grade class where I think I might have told the story on here, but there was a teacher or there was a kid sitting kind of alone. I call him quarantined, so to speak, right? Like, which not in a bad way. Like he was sitting by himself. And, you know, I used to think of a kid sitting alone, that must mean that they're lost or they don't have any friends. What I've actually learned is, like, my son actually prefers being alone frequently. Like he's in second grade and there's times he's like, Dad, I don't want to work with anybody. Like, I just prefer to just calm myself and just sit there and not do anything. But this boy was sitting alone. And so anyway, I see him all of a sudden in the middle of class, he gets up and he's got stuff in his hand and he wanders through the entire room and he sits down at another desk in the back. And then he gets up from there and he comes back to his seat. So after class, I went up to him and I was like, hey buddy, I'm just curious. Like, my name's Mr. Brian. I told him, I said, my name's Mr. Brian. I said, you know, teachers teach you guys. I get to teach the teachers. And he goes, oh, well, good thing you're here today because ours need it bad. And I was like, okay. Cool. I'm like, but anyway, I'm like, what was that? I saw you over there. Then I saw you over there. He goes, well, let me tell you what. He goes, my teacher says I'm special. And I said, why are you special? And he goes, well, because I get a home. That's my home. And he pointed to his first desk and he goes, and that's my vacation home over there. And he points his eye. He's like, my teacher says I'm allowed to go between my home and my vacation home as many times as I want, but I'm not allowed to stop at anyone else's home. Cause if I did, they call that trespassing and I could go to jail. Like, so I looked at the teacher and she like bit her fingernail and she goes, and then she goes, well, you could go to jail. And then she looks at the boy and she goes, tell Mr. Brian the truth. You don't just like to trespass. And the boy looks at me and goes, no, I like to trespass. And sometimes I steal while I'm trespassing. I know. But like, great, great idea, right? A home and a vacation home. Some teachers will tell kids not to get out of their seats. Other mm-hmm. teachers will say, here's a place for you to go, right? Two really different things. Mm-hmm. So awareness is a big thing. And I agree with you. I think you'll see that at all levels, right? So you'll see that in elementary school. Kids just come to school and they got so much of their own stuff that they're focused on, especially in middle school, right? And middle school is crazy. I mean, I mean that in a good way, but it's like the movie Twins, right? You can have a monster and a shrimp and they're like best friends in the same class. And then you start talking to them, and sometimes like the shrimp is way smarter than the monster, and you're just like, it can mess with your head, can it?
Yes, it's totally true. Middle school is a hard age. It's like survival. And I think the reason that middle school can be kind of a dramatic age is that everyone is hoping that no one ever focuses on them. They don't ever want the story to be on them. So if I share a dramatized story about someone else, then everyone can look at that person instead of me, because something about middle school brains, you know, kids are always thinking that everyone is watching them all the time.
And you have your own son who's a middle schooler in your school, correct?
I do.
How's that work?
Well, I actually had him. So the blessing behind moving to the middle school level at this point in my career is that I had a third through fifth grade building before this and about 400 students, 375-ish. And that is a feeder school to this middle school level. And so half of these kids have been mine for the last 3 years, which is right. Pretty awesome, because the ability to establish a quick, you know, bridge between that relationship and this has been really easy. He is really used to having me as the principal. Luckily, he's a pretty good kid. And so I don't actually even see him that often. We may cross paths in the hallway and give a high five or something like that. But with 850 students here, it's not often that I see him every day.
Right. Of course. Of course.
But he also knows that I'll lay the smack down if I hear something.
You will. You will. I'm sure you will. My mom, when I was in high school, my mother was at the school. My mother was, she wasn't the director then. She was, I think she was a special ed teacher, but she was a huge help for me. I mean, because I was never the greatest student. And she basically got me through high school by basically hand selecting my teacher. I mean, she decided who I was going to have. And it's a look, all jobs have their benefits, and it's good to have a person on the inside. I don't care where you are, you know, or what you're doing.
So true.
But my mother and my friends loved my mom, because my mom would always like give them passes if they were late. They would always go, you know, and which is cool. My mother was a teacher for 27 years and an administrator for, I think she was an administrator for like the last 5 or 6 of her career.
So, wow.
Long time. We come from an education family. What about you? So so I know you said you're good family. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have one of each. And
where
you
are
talked
you
about, then? I'm the oldest.
Oldest,
bossy. That can be used to determine or describe me at some point in time. So you mentioned that, you know, your mom was a working mom. So I am the first female in my generation to have a full-time working job.
Wow.
My mom was an RN for a couple of years, 2 or 3, and she opened a business at one point for a couple of years, but primarily has been a stay-at-home mom. My sister's a stay-at-home mom. My sister-in-law is a stay-at-home mom. And so I think that is really challenging, being the first one. And I know they seek to understand a lot of times, but I always find myself comparing to what they are able to do in a day versus what I am able to do in a day on the home front. And that can be stressful sometimes.
Yes, I'm sure it can. What do you find what do you see as the biggest challenges or differences between managing an elementary school building versus managing a middle school building? Like for example, for me as a consultant, as a person who does workshops, I just across the board, middle school and high school are harder. Like when you get in front of elementary teachers, they're just notoriously nice. You know what I mean? Like they're just happier. They smile a lot. And I'm not saying middle school and high school teachers don't, but when you ask a bunch of elementary school and special ed, usually teachers, why'd you go into teaching in the first place? They all talk about kids, right? Cause I liked kids. Cause when I was little, I don't know, I was a babysitter for a long time. And then they talk about, when you ask that same question, middle school and high school teachers, a lot of them talk about content. Well, I love math. I don't know. I mean, math has been my thing. I could have been an architect, I guess, or maybe an accountant, but I became a math teacher. And like, so with little kids, I feel like oftentimes the content or the kids with older teachers, I think a lot of times the kids get in the way of the content. Whereas with little kid teachers, often the content's in the way of the kid, right? It's like my focus is on the kid. So I see that as a difference. Do you see any differences between the groups and what are they if you do?
I totally do. I think trust is harder to establish at the middle school level. I don't know if that's because of the people or if it's because of how the day is structured. You know, we have 47 minute periods, 9 periods in a day, and they just fly by. And so you know, the ability to have face-to-face contact with each of my staff members daily is impossible. It's impossible, which takes twice as long then to establish any sort of trust with them because I don't see them every single day. I have about 100 staff members, certified, non-certified, custodial, kitchen, you know, all of that together. And I can tell you there are days that go by that I think I have not even seen so-and-so today. Yeah. And so I try and make an attempt to do that. But like I said, the days just go so fast.
Yeah. And I think with middle school and high school also, when you talk about teachers relationship building with kids, it's harder because like you said, there's 47 minutes and they got so many things that in their minds they have to get to academically. Right. And so that's what takes the focus. And I've been challenging groups everywhere I've gone recently, especially middle schools and high schools. I've worked with a couple of them in the last few days. I've said to the teachers, I want to make clear to you guys, like one of the rules that I lived by as a teacher was that required time does not count with difficult students. So if you're required to be with a kid, if the schedule says the kid has to be in your class, you don't get to count that as relationship building time. And then I say to them, so that same kid that you're struggling with right now, or that's disrupting your class, or that's unmotivated, challenging, whatever the word is that you want to use, how much time have you actually spent with them outside of class? When you can look at them and say, just so you know, right now, I could be anywhere else in the school right now doing anything else I want to be doing, but I'm choosing to spend this time with you. And I've been saying to people, I'm asking you to do 5 minutes a day. 5 minutes a day with your most, with that kid who gets in your way in math or science, 5 minutes. And I'm like, pull them out of somebody else's class. Trust me, that teacher won't mind, right? That they'll probably be like, here you go. You can have them for 10 minutes. Right? And then vice versa though. So then when like that other teacher has a free period, they can maybe come to your room and pull a kid out of there for, and I used to do these walks around the school where we would just go shoulder to shoulder and just, and I would tell the kid before we went, I say, listen, let's establish some ground rules. Okay. Ground rule number one, you're allowed to ask me any questions you want to know about me, literally anything in the whole world. Number two, I'm allowed to ask you anything I want to know about you, anything in the whole world. Number three, neither one of us are required to answer. So if you don't want to answer a question that I ask, you can just look at me and say, Mr. Mendler, excuse me, but I don't really want to answer that. I don't feel comfortable. Number four, I say to them, I will not talk about school. If you want to talk about school, you can absolutely bring up school. If you want advice, if you want help, if you want to talk about a situation, I'm here, but I'm not going to bring it up. So anything else. And then we would just go and we'd have these conversations and the things I would learn about kids in literally like 2 or 3 minutes that then I could have those nuggets. Sometimes you ask a question, you're like, you know, tell me about your dad. And I don't want to talk about my dad. Okay, cool. And like, you know that, and they kind of say it almost rudely, but now you know you've like hit a nerve. And so like in that moment, I'm not going to talk about your dad, but I'm going to put it in my mind that, okay, if that kid's having a bad day, there's a good chance that it might relate to something going on in his life that I hit that nerve when things were calm. You know what I mean? And then you can often draw back to that later on. Hey, I see that you're upset and I know you're really angry and I know you're really sad and I know you're taking it out on me right now, but what really is going on in your life? Like what is actually happening in your life right now that's making you feel this way or talk to me this way? Because I know that's not you talking in there. Who is talking in there? And it can like keep you calm in a time where it's easy to get really riled up, you know?
That's so true. Actually, very recently, we had a student who we felt was amped up and probably needed a few minutes just to like breathe and calm down and relax. And we knew if we approached this student in the classroom and had that audience, it would not go down very well. And so what we did is we had our counselor, you know, call down to the room, had the teacher approach the student, have the student, you know, report to the office, whatever. A little less threatening that way. Yeah. The student still refused. We went through 2 periods. Multiple contact was made. The student refused to leave his seat and was still just amped. But what he did do was he emailed my dean of students and he said, if you want to talk, I'll ball with you. And so she responded, I'll meet you in the gym through email because we're 1-to-1. And so he met her in the gym. They spent 40 minutes together. She won a game of horse and he was laughing, smiling, continued the rest of his day successfully. And I think just, you know, not giving up on kids when they say no, they don't actually mean no. They just mean not right now. And being persistent and then meeting them where they're at. You know, it was incredible that he reached out and said, I'm willing to meet you halfway. Don't let your pride get in the way and say, no, I said we're meeting in the office. Just meet them where they're at. If what you really want to do is solve the problem, then just give a little. Right. And that's, I think, one of the most profound things that has happened this year, where a student has advocated for themselves, and then we were able to build a relationship based on that.
Why do you think, I have my own theory on this, but I'm curious what you think. Why do you think it's so hard for so many people to do that? Like I feel like it's, and I think the reason, my reasoning is that I think a lot of people believe that if they give in, it makes them look weak as a teacher, where actually the opposite is true. I actually think the opposite is true. So I think giving in / quote unquote walking away, or like you said, meeting them where they're at, I actually believe that that is a sign of strength, right? Like I believe in life, asking for help means you're strong. It doesn't mean you're weak, right? But I think a lot of people see it the wrong way, especially newer, younger teachers. It's kind of like their mindset is, I have to be tough. I have to show the kid that I'm in charge. And with a lot of challenging kids, I feel like that fails miserably, because that's exactly what the kid wants. The kid's like, yeah, really? Because I want to be in charge. And you can't win that battle. Like there's certain kids that are just, they have nothing to lose, right? So that kid, he can just sit in that seat all day long. And what are you going to really do at the end of the day, right? Like, so it's,
yeah. And we have a lot of kids, I think, that are craving, like, see me. Do you see me? Do you see me? And if you don't see me, I'm going to make sure you see me. So when you approach me and it's confrontational, I'm going to make you see me by being confrontational right back. And I completely agree with you about the winning thing. I do think if there's an audience, I'm sure you've heard this phrase before, what will the other kids think?
Of course.
If so-and-so talks to me like this, what will the other kids think? Well, you know what? Most of those kids, they totally understand what you're doing. They don't think that you're weak because you walked away from a situation, because they know you're going to circle back to it later. Just maybe Correct. Not right now.
Correct. And the other thing is, as a teacher, you can preempt that. Like one of the preempt, you can get ahead of that by telling your class what's going to happen. So like I used to look at my kids early in the school year when I taught like self-contained special ed, I would look at them like first day of school and I'd say, guys, listen closely. Unfortunately, some of you guys in this classroom this year are going to do and say some rude, nasty, inappropriate, not nice, mean things. I know you are. How do you know, Mr. Mendler? Good question, little 14-year-old. Here's how I know. It happens every single year in my life. I just want to let you know right now that if and when it happens, I will not always be stopping my lesson to deal with it. It doesn't mean I didn't hear it, and it doesn't mean I'm not going to do anything about it. It just means sometimes I think teaching the 23 of you, the 19 of you, the 34 of you that are not being inappropriate is much more important than stopping for the one or two of you who are. And then the last thing I would tell them is, and one last thing I want to be clear about right now is this, whatever consequence I choose to give or not to give will be between that student and their parents and me and nobody else. I will not be sharing everyone's business with the entire class, but I would let them know this right up front. So they knew very clearly going in. And now this way, when a kid's acting, you know, a little bit foolish and I'm sitting there like, you know what? I could engage this power struggle, which is not really going to get me anywhere. Or you know what? I'm just going to teach through it. Like it's a little rain and I'm the airplane and I'm going to fly right through this thunderstorm right now and the heck with it, right? I'm going to burst through it. And like when you choose to do that and you actually make that your thought process, like, and you let the kids know specifically, then when it happens, right, a kid can be inappropriate. You can say, knock it off or cut it out or be quiet. You can start to walk away. As you're walking away, the kid will mumble, right? That happens every time. Kid mumbles. And I tell teachers, don't be the one who gets caught in that trap and turns around and says, what did you say to me, young lady? Because you already know what they said. And the last thing you want them to do is repeat it, but hear it differently. Like hear the mumble differently. Instead of hearing them calling you a rude, nasty, inappropriate name, hear them saying, excuse me, Mr. Mendler, but right now I have to call you a couple names under my breath. Because if I don't, I'm going to look like a wimp in front of the entire class. And I can't look like a wimp in front of the entire class. Everyone knows that. So could you please be the mature adult with a master's degree and continue walking away from me? Because I have to eat lunch with these guys and I have to ride the bus with them and I have to be on the playground with them and I have to be around them all day long. After all, Mr. Mendler, what do you tell us to do when someone calls us a name on the playground? You tell us to just turn
walk away,
right? How come you can't? after all, Mr. Mailer, what do you tell us to do when someone says something to us that we don't like? You tell us to just ignore it. Well, how come you can't? And if you did, I would really appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir. Like, I actually think that's exactly what they're saying in the only way they can say it. And if, as a teacher, if you can start hearing that, it makes you smile, right? It makes you laugh because you're like, that's really what the kid's saying. Oh yeah, he called me a name, but really he said this. That's what they know. That's how they know how to talk, a lot of these kids. Get, you know, move past it is what I tell teachers. It's hard though. It's hard.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. I just think circling back is the most important way to hopefully be preventative instead of retroactive, to kind of put a wedge in it before it happens again. And that preventative action may happen 6, 7, 8, 9 times, but if you're consistent with it, they know if I do something inappropriate in the classroom, she's going to come find me later. And then I'm going to have to talk about it. And before that, they just kind of get a little bit annoyed about having to have the same conversation over and over again. And so hopefully that will start to change the behavior. But behavior modification is not a one-stop shop. You're not going to fix something in even a year. It's going to take a long, sustainable, consistent approach.
Which makes sense, of course, because many of the kids, like using where you are now, right? Many of these kids that we're talking about are 12, 13, 14 years old. It took them 12, 13, 14 years to become the way they are. You don't change something that's been a certain way for 14 years in one day. That's not how it works. But it's important for teachers to remember that, because it's so much easier to say this. Like, it's easier to say you should just walk away. And it's like, it's the same with my own kids. I'm sure it is probably for you with yours. Like, where there's times where I'm dealing with my kids and my son will say something and I'll say, buddy, enough. And I'll walk away from him. And as I'm walking away, he's like, you're such a jerk, dad. You're so mean, dad. And I'm like, what? And my wife's like, you just got done teaching people not to go back. And I'm like, right. That was for everybody else, not me. Like, I mean, right. I mean, it's not easy. Like, it's easy to react. It's easy to respond, which is why I know deep down, that's not really the right approach. You know, one of the things that we learn in addiction recovery is if it's easy, I don't want it. Right. I'm not supposed to want things in my life that are easy. I'm supposed to want things that are hard. I used to always want everything easy. That was kind of how I lived my life, was looking for the easy way out. You know, let me do whatever I need to do to get through school, whether it's I copy someone, whether it's someone else does the work for me. I don't really care. Right. I liked easy, but easy, it's not really valuable, you know, and I think it's important for teachers to remember that. Like, if it's going super easy, like, it's cool to like, look. The other good news about this is once you do connect with your really challenging students, usually they'll do anything for you, right? That's the difference. Is like kids like me, I mean, once you got me on your side, you would never have to ask your class to be quiet again, because I would walk in and tell everyone to shut up for you. I'd be like, yo, shut up. That lady's trying to teach. We love her. Wait till next class. We hate that dude. And like literally, right? Literally,
it's so like, true.
That's what some kids do, but
they'll tell you anything too.
That's for you. Right?
Yes. They'll tell you anything.
I see your students like that, just like the posts you do on social media, like the hugs and the smiles and just the way you get to their level. And, you know, I love it. I love what you do. It's awesome. It's great to watch.
I appreciate that. You know, I preached at the elementary level. Every day's a new day. Every day's a new day. But it wasn't as hard to make every day a new day when they're 8 or 7 as when they're 12 and 13. Middle school kids can say things that are just raw and hurt. Oh boy, do they hurt. And whether it's to you or you hear them say it to someone else, but
Do you have one off the top of your head? What's the best one you've ever had a kid say to you? The best one I ever saw with my own eyes, while you're thinking about yours, the best one I ever saw, it didn't happen to me, happened to one of my co-teachers. A kid called her coffee breath having hoe under his breath. He was like, coffee breath having hoe. And she got a little mad. And I was like, wait. She goes, what? I said, you can't get mad. She goes, why? I said, because your breath stinks. Like, it's bad for the smells. Like, he told you the truth. And I was like, I don't know about the other part, but the coffee breath, you for sure have that. Like, she just started laughing. She was like, hey, thanks for telling me, buddy. And she just walked away. Like, what left is there to say?
So what's crazy about what you said is I think of what kids say, the foundation is truth, even their insults. And so one of the most, I would say, painful conversations that I've had with a student this year was a student called me a white privileged bitch. Mm. And like that hurt, because I try so hard to inform myself to have equitable practices, not just myself, but in the whole school. But that's a sensitive topic. And so that really took me some time to kind of process through and make sure that I was indeed checking myself to make sure that I was, you know, treating all students fairly.
Yeah. So what did you do with that one when she said that? What was the exchange? What was your response in that moment? Do you remember?
Well, first I walked away because it wasn't the right time to have the conversation. We were in front of kids, staff members. It was at activity time. So it's not an appropriate time to have the conversation.
Let's set the stage for this. So you were at activity time in front of a bunch of people. A kid calls you this name and you had the power to turn and walk away.
Yes, you have to.
I know. Yeah, thank you. That's not easy.
You're right. It's not. It's not
easy.
So then I took a few minutes just on my own to reflect about what would make her say something that she believes as the truth, because middle schoolers' perception is their reality. And so why is that her perception, and how can I work to change that? And so I don't even think it was one thing that changed it necessarily, but it was over time. And so it's only, you know, the beginning of fall, but we worked really hard, my dean of students and I, with this student and the group of friends. And something happened last week that I know to most people sounds really silly, but to me, it was like a peace offering. She was walking outside to activity time and I was walking towards the school because I had some garbage that I had collected on the playground, a Doritos bag or something, I think. And the garbage can was up by the front door. So she was coming out, I was walking in. And as we crossed paths, she grabbed the garbage from my hand, turned around and went and threw it away herself.
No way.
And I know that seems so trivial, but I just stood there and I thought, she is not able to tell me that she's sorry in words, but she just showed me that she's sorry and by doing something nice for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just little things like that. And, you know, every day is a new day and you can't hold a grudge and you have to come back smiling and ready to go no matter what kids say to you the day before. And it just kind of proves that it works, because over time, that relationship then was restored, which is, I think, really important.
Did you ever have a conversation with her about what she said, like a specific dialogue with her? Like, did you ever sit down and say, specifically tell me why? I'm just curious, like, why do you feel this way about me? Or is it that you were just really upset and wanted to just call me a name and you don't really feel this way about me?
Not necessarily, only because I think that this conversation was built upon something that was repeated behavior that I was addressing in that moment. And so that was a defense mechanism. And it's so hard. This student was not a student of mine in third through fifth grade at Washington School. And so what I found is the most challenging piece of my position right now is being the disciplinarian without having a relationship with kids, because they don't care what I say. They don't trust me yet. And so I really try to be out and about at the beginning of the year, but with 850 kids, I'm not going to know everybody's name. And that was a hard sense of reality for me this year.
Yeah. Because I think, and more for, so I have a lot of teachers who listen to this, and more for the teachers, like if that happens to a teacher, I think, you know, you can take an approach where I love the walking away piece at the beginning. Like that's my favorite. And then I think for a teacher though, later on, what you could do if you're interested is you could pull that kid aside. And the way now a lot of teachers look at me and they're like, you're crazy. But I would start the conversation. If a kid said that to me, if I was going to address them individually about it, I would start the conversation by walking in, looking at the kid and saying, I'm sorry. I would say, I'm sorry. And now a lot of teachers would be like, wait a minute, you're going to say you're sorry. A kid just called you that in front of everybody and you're apologizing. My rule is anytime I apologize for something that I'm not really sorry for, what I'll say to a kid is, I'm sorry for the fact that anyone or anything at this school made you as upset as you got today. Because I want to tell you, like when I wake up in the morning, when my colleagues wake up in the morning, I'm pretty sure none of us want anybody in this school to ever get that upset. And for whatever I did, for whatever they did, for whatever any other kids did in this school that helped cause that, I'm really, really sorry. I really am. And then I would say something like, I got to be better, but I'm not perfect. Kind of like you, right? I mean, you're not perfect, right? I'm not perfect. And I make mistakes kind of like someone else we know, right? yeah, I make mistakes too, right? It's kind of amazing how similar we are. By the way, is there anything you think you might be able to do differently next time? Well, I'm not sure. What could I do differently? I don't know. Like maybe addressing me privately, like maybe be pulling me aside and saying, excuse me, Mr. Mendler, but I don't like the way you treat me right now. Like instead of yelling at me in front of like, yeah, you know, I probably could do that next time. Cool. Okay. And like, you can kind of hash it out. But starting with I'm sorry as the adult is really hard for a lot of adults to do. But I think it's the most powerful diffuser. The most powerful diffuser of an upset kid is to just keep saying you're sorry. And if the kid's like flipping out on me, I just keep agreeing and saying I'm sorry. Mr. Mendler, you're a jerk. I know, and I'm sorry. I hate you. That's fine, and I'm sorry. You're dumb. Correct. Well, I picked this profession for like 45 grand a year to be cussed out by you. Yeah. Tell me how dumb I am, because I wasn't sure I realized that on my own, right? Like where you just keep agreeing and saying you're sorry to the point where the kid kind of looks at you and they're like, wait, there's nothing left to argue because you're simply agreeing with me and apologizing. So powerful.
Agreed. You know, just this morning, actually, I was walking through the cafeteria during breakfast service and a student yelled something out and it was mumbled. I didn't even hear what he said, but I knew by the tone that it probably wasn't appropriate for school. And so I approached his table and I put my hand on his back and I said, I don't yell at you like that. Why did you yell at me like that? And the rest of the table, like you talked about earlier, was like, yeah, man, she doesn't yell at us. Why did you yell at her? That's not appropriate. That's not cool. She's cool. Don't do that. And like you said, you know, kids will start to stick up for you, but I can't expect something from my kids that I don't practice myself. So if
correct.
I'm not willing to walk away, if I'm not willing to swear, if I'm not willing to yell at kids, I can't expect them to not do that to me if I do that to them.
Correct. Correct. And I think that's true across the board. I think that's true across the board. I think that's true for teachers with kids as well. Like you have to be willing to walk the walk, or kids will see it, man. Kids can sniff out a fake from a mile away. And a lot of the kids that we're talking about, they don't trust already. Like their mindset is they've come from a world where they say, I don't trust adults. Right. And so they're coming in with that as the baseline. So you have to break through that. Like you have to break through the, I don't trust adults, to where not only will they trust an adult, but they'll trust you. But it takes work, and it takes a relentless energy. Sometimes it takes saying to the kid, I know what's going on with you. I know what's going on with you. You don't trust adults. And you know what? Want to know something crazy? That I'm 43 years old. And in 43 years of my life, you've been through more in 13 years than I have been through in 43 years of mine. And so my respect level for you will never drop below a really high level. I will always respect you at a really high level. That said, the respect level could go even higher, because it's not enough to just come to school. It's not enough. Like, you got to come, man. You got to sit down. You got to listen. You got to learn from these people. These people love you. They care about you. Granted, certain adults in the school have a really strange way of showing it. That's for sure. But I think deep down they do, right? They care about you. I think even teachers who really struggle working with challenging kids, they think what they're doing is best for them. You know, don't you think that?
No one comes to school and thinks I'm going to make a kid's life miserable today. That's never anyone's goal. I've never worked with anyone like that anyhow. And building trust with kids, like you said, is so important. And holding up your end of the bargain. You know, if a student comes to you and reports something, even informally, so-and-so did this to me, they're reporting it because to them it was a big deal in their day. And if you say you're going to follow up, you better make sure to follow up, because any trust that you do have with that student will quickly shatter if you don't follow through on your promises. You know, a student was sick and I say, hey, I'll have your work collected, have your parents stop and pick it up in the office. If I don't follow through on that, to them, I broke a promise. No matter how minute it was in my day, to them, that was really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, everything you're saying, it's the same teacher with kid, right? If you make a promise, you know, no matter how little or how minute it is, you got to stick up. You got to do it. You got to follow through. Listen, I want to do a question. So I got this question from somebody on Twitter. It says, hey, love your podcast. Use tons of your ideas. I have a student who is verbally disruptive and disrespectful to teachers. He has a learning disability and I'm showing him a lot of love, kindness, and patience, but it's taking a toll on me. I know he would rather be bad than dumb, like you say. He doesn't follow class expectations and says, I don't care, get out of my face, go back to high school, you can't teach. man, some days with this student are amazing and he thanks me for teaching him. If he comes in with a bad mood, there are some days where I can't get him back at all. Do you have any ideas, any strategies? Thanks for your ideas and support. So the first thing I'll just say to that is, you know, the good news is that you're seeing some good stuff with him. And I think it's important to just look at that. I think it's easy with challenging students to get caught up in the negative. And there is negative. I'm not saying there isn't, but if you see positive, that's good. And remember that changing behaviors is a roller coaster ride. It will be a roller coaster ride. It's a roller coaster ride with anybody in the world. When I try to change something about myself, I have a good hour, bad hour. Sometimes I have a good day, bad day. We all go through that pattern. So if you're seeing that pattern, you're on the right track. Like, don't get off that track. And I understand that it's taking a toll on you. What I say about the taking the toll on you piece, though, is you got to look for some support. Like, look around. Ask a colleague or a co-teacher to take this kid for 40 minutes a day to help you out. Like, I mean, this kind of a kid is an incredibly challenging kid to have for a really long stretch in the day, you know? And so you want to look for a little bit of help wherever you can, but also mental toughness is part of this. I mean, it's important to walk in and decide it with a kid like this. I'm not going to get offended. I'm not going to allow a kid like this to offend me. Everything this kid does, every disrespectful behavior you see is a teachable moment. That's all you look at. Don't look at it as he's disrespectful. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Look at it as, oh yay, he's disrespectful. There's a cool lesson that he's brought me, right? I don't have to teach math for the next 20 minutes. Why? Because I get to teach this kid about how you ask for something appropriately. I get to teach this kid how you say please and thank you and good morning and nice to meet you. And like, make the social part of the make the social skills part of your lesson, the foundation with this kid. And that way you'll never be annoyed, because every time the kid does something inappropriate, you'll just simply see it as another avenue to teach. You know,
I completely agree. And going back to like, find support. I think one of the reasons that teachers amp up in a situation like this is because they feel like it's on them. They have to be the one to fix it. They have to be the one to change it. And I wrote a blog post actually earlier this year when I transitioned between Washington School and Chaland. That transition was really hard for me, not to come to Chaland, but to leave Washington, because I had built so many foundational relationships there that were positive. And I wasn't ready to give that up to someone else yet. But we have to remember that we're not the only ones. We are not the only ones that can build a bridge and a relationship with a kiddo. And so, like you said, you know, look for other colleagues. And if he comes in escalated or in a bad mood first thing out of the gate, how can we change that from the minute he walks through the door? How can we be proactive and gauge his mood and then respond appropriately? Maybe he is shooting hoops with someone in the gymnasium the first 20 minutes of the day. Yep. Maybe that's something that he loves to do. What I found with middle school kids is that not always progressive discipline works in our favor. What I found is if you give kids more who probably don't necessarily or haven't earned it, they will respond positively.
Absolutely.
We have given service learning opportunities to kids who are struggling in classrooms and they're shocked. Well, I've been bad, but you're giving this to me? You're letting me do this extra thing that good kids get to do? All of a sudden you start changing how they see themselves and they assimilate to what your expectations are.
Correct. And it makes so much sense that works. One of the strategies that I give to schools is to do mentoring, right? So where you take and they already do this, but they usually do it with their quote unquote good kids, right? So they'll take their best fifth grade reader and have that kid go read to the kindergartners. By the way, I'm for that too. I think that's a good approach also, but I always advocate take your worst. Take your fifth grader who's reading at a second grade reading level and have them go read to the kindergartners. Now that fifth grader who's when they're in normal fifth grade class is disruptive and difficult and unmotivated and three grade levels behind. Now they go to that kindergarten class and they're the big fifth grader. Like, look at me. And all of a sudden they're ahead of everybody else and all those feelings, right? Attention, power, control, competence, belonging, the reasons kids misbehave, you fill them all at the same time. And it's absolutely the right approach to give the most challenging kid more power, More power. Mm-hmm. You just got to be careful with how you do it, right? In her book, yes. I've talked about this on here a couple times. Barbara Colarosa, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she wrote a book called The Bully, the Bullied, and the Bystander. And she's a bullying expert out of Canada. And one of the things that she talks about this phenomenon, but she talks about in relation to bullying, she says, take your biggest bully on the playground and put them on bully patrol, where they wear a shirt that says bully patrol, and they're in charge of making sure nobody on the playground gets picked on. And basically what you say to them is, you're the best bullies we've ever seen. Like, you guys are so good at it that we know that you can get it to stop. Like, and you're going to use their skill for your own advantage and give them that power control that they're seeking. And that's really what she talks about. A bully is seeking power and control, and they feel it when they make somebody else feel bad. So if you can flip that and give them power and control in another way, almost always it helps fix it. And it makes so much sense. But again, it goes against the conventional thought process for a lot of people. It's like, that kid was inappropriate, we're taking things away from him. One of the things that I tell sometimes people get, I mean, you've sat through my workshop, so you know it can get a little uncomfortable in there. But
yeah.
Yes. But one of the things that I say to administrators, and I mean it, is that if I was a principal, and this is probably why I'm not one, so let me be clear about that. But if I was one, I would not allow the word disrespect to come across my desk on a referral form. I would say to my staff, disrespect is off limits. You are not allowed to write a disrespect is nothing more than a teachable moment. And every single time that it happens, you can spend 5 minutes writing a referral form, or you can spend that same 5 minutes teaching them how to be more respectful. Those are your choices. And I'm not taking choice A. Choice A is off limits. You're not writing that referral form. That means you get 5 minutes, that same 5 minutes you were going to spend writing that referral form, you get to spend teaching them how to be more respectful. And watch the difference when you do one versus the other. And I would make disrespect all about teachable moments. That's all it would be. And I would try to get my staff constantly doing this all day. I think the biggest thing schools need to work on with kids is manners. Like, for the most part, manners stink in school. Like, when I walk into school and people don't know me, people are like, who are you? Why are you here? Are you her husband? And I'm always like, no, but she wishes. And, you know, but I mean, that's not how you greet an adult that you don't know. Like, you don't scream at them from across a room or from across the hall. By the way, I don't know. I don't think I told the story when I saw you guys, but one time this didn't happen to me. I was working at a school. I'll never forget it. I was in Des Moines, Iowa, a middle school. And I walk in a school and I walk in the classroom. In the first classroom I walk in, I'm fully waiting for them to just yell, who are you? Which is usually how it starts. And I introduce myself. Well, this room I walked in, nobody did that. In fact, they all kind of looked up at me and they looked right back down at their work. And I was like, oh, whatever. And I kind of weave my way to the back. And all of a sudden I see this boy get up from the side of the room, and he's wandering through all the area. And I see him coming toward me. He's looking at me, and he stops like 4 inches from me. And he looks me directly in the eyes and he goes, hi. And I said, hi. And he reaches out his right hand. And he goes, my name's Chris. And I said, hi, Chris. He goes, this is seventh grade social studies. Today we're working on the different causes of the Civil War. If there's anything I can help you with, I'll be sitting right over there. That's my seat. Thank you for visiting our class. And then he walks away and I'm like, holy cow, like, who does that? And I went to the next class, same thing. I go to the third class, same thing, except in the third class, it was pretty funny. There was a girl and she was talking to me, except she wasn't looking at me. She was kind of looking like around. Have you ever had a person talking to you and they're not looking right at you? You're kind of secretly thinking, like, do they have a wandering eye? Like, what's going on? Yeah. You know, but anyway, so she's looking and so we do the whole thing. She says, good to see you, blah, blah, blah. Thanks for visiting our class. And as I turn to leave, I notice why she looked like she had a wandering eye. There was a full blown script taped over my shoulder that said, hi, my name is blank. And then it said in parentheses, reach out your right hand now. Right. And the kid, like, robotically, you know, this is seventh grade. Today we're working on blank. If there's anything I can help you with, I'll be sitting right over. And then it said in parentheses, point to your seat now. And the kid pointed to, you know, but I mean, that's something anybody can do. Like, anybody can do that at any school, any grade level, like teaching kids. And by the way, when I went, so I went to the principal for lunch. So I was kind of doing my thing in the morning, and then we met up for lunch, and she said to me, how was your morning? And I said, I don't know. And she said, what do you mean you don't know? I said, I'm still caught up on the fact that every class I walked in your school, every single classroom I walked in, they made me feel comfortable and they made me feel special and they made me feel welcome. And here I sit, right, years later with no notes, talking about this school like it was yesterday. And I've been to probably 700 schools since then. Why, right? Why does a person, what does, and I say this to people, what does your school do that makes the guest, the stranger, feel welcome, feel special? What skills do the kids have? And many of them don't have the skills. And a lot of times we're so focused on the math or the science or the social studies that we forget what's actually important. And what's actually important is how we make other people feel. And I'll never forget that school. I'll never forget my whole life. I'll never forget that school because it's the only place I've ever done where every room I walked in, the kids had amazing manners. Right. Right. I mean,
awesome.
My kids have bad manners, my kids, my own children. I feel like I'm a good dad and they have a good mom. And like, you probably spend hours with manners on your kids. And there's probably times where you go home and they're just like, Mom, give me this or give me that. And you're like, what? Like we spend. And now think of all the kids that you and I work with that they don't have anyone working with manners on them at all, ever in their life. In fact, not only do they not have people working on it with them, they have people doing the opposite. They have people using horrendous manners with them all the time. And then they come into school and of course they repeat what they see.
And I always say what you allow will continue. And so if you allow your students to, you know, not greet people when they walk into your room or, you know, shout from across the place, who are you? If you allow that, nothing will ever change. You don't have to address it in a negative context. You can just say, oh, hey, by the way, when they come in next time, what you probably should do is, you know, reach your hand out, shake their hand, welcome them to our room, ask if they have any questions.
Right.
Just reteaching.
That's it. And that's all everything really is. It's like, it's the same mindset that is, it would be if a kid struggled with a math concept or a science fact, like you wouldn't punish them. You wouldn't be angry at them. You wouldn't be furious with them. You would just simply teach it to them again. And if they didn't get it the second time, you probably teach it to them a third time. And then maybe a fourth time. And like the great teachers might even teach it to them a fifth or sixth or 50th time. And like, you just keep going. And so you don't worry as much about, did the kid understand it? Like it might take some kids the entire year before you connect with them. It doesn't mean you quit. It doesn't mean you stop doing what is best for that kid in all situations. But again, not easy always.
Yes. And our job is the most delayed gratification position ever. You are not going to find the fruits of your labor even this year or next year or 3 years. You might find it 10 years down the road, which is hard to remember, you know, in that moment.
15 for me last week on my podcast. Last week on my podcast. I mean, I get emotional when I think about this kid, Mike, where he was when he came to my room. And the fact that now that he owns a barbershop and he's successful and he's got a big sign in his town that's got his logo on it in the town that we went to school in where everyone couldn't stand him. And, you know, and talking about how the world opens up to kids, you know, school can be a really hard place. School is this place where, think about it, in school to be successful, you have to be good at like 10 things, right? So like, especially middle school and high school, math, science, ELA, social studies, art, music, phys ed, foreign language. I just rattled off 8 off the top of my head without even thinking. I'm guaranteed there's probably 2 more in there, correct? Well, in real life, you only have to be great at one thing, you know?
And guess what, Brian? If you're not good at one of those things, and let's say you fail, then you maybe can't do what you're really good at, which is play sports, be on an activity team. You know, that's really hard.
Right. You can't do the other things because you failed. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
I know, which can be really hard for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. I could do this all day. I love this.
I know. This is good conversation. I appreciate it so much.
It's fun. Well, I miss you. When I was there last year in February. Well, we won't forget the date.
Yep. Yes. Oh, awkward. Oh, goodness. Any big plans the rest of your day today?
Yes. So I finished this and then I'm going to take a little break and then I have a 2-hour webinar that I'm doing from here. So
wow. We're awesome. So
we'll tell everybody we're actually recording this on Halloween on Thursday. Mm-hmm. It's going to run. I say welcome on November 4th, but we don't record them on the day, So I actually, this is my first Halloween that I've been home in like the last 5 years. And I made sure that I would be home this year for Halloween. And so there was a school that wanted me to come, and I said, I'll do whatever you want, but it's got to be from on the computer, which is, technology is amazing now. I mean, it really is. Like, I've got this setup now where I am, where I can basically do, I can be standing up here and I can have like my big screen TV is here. I can have as many schools in the world as I want on a conference at the same time. Because where I'm trying to go with my business is, I get a lot of times calls where they want me to be in four or five places on the same day. And I can't do that, right? Like in August, there's times literally like this different schools want you for the same day. And so I'm trying to make it where I can do everything from here and have everybody on at the same time. And if everybody's on at the same time, I could have like 10 schools on at the same time, bring their costs way down, and then not have to travel, which the hardest part about my job is traveling. And it's not because of the travel. I don't mind the travel at all. It's just tough on my kids. I have two little
kids.
You know, but I'm not complaining. Like, I'm not complaining.
No, I get it. I'm
grateful for what I get to do, which you had me cracking up the other day when you originally texted me what you said. I didn't realize you were presenting at this conference, and you sent me the video of them showing a video of me at the conference. Yeah.
That was like embedded into a keynote. Now, really? It was, what did they call it? An Ignite session. So like every so many minutes, like a different person came up, but I was just like, interesting how that.
What do you think about conferences? Conferences are interesting for me. I have a love-hate relationship with conferences. I think
people, that's what I crave sometimes, is people. Just, you know, I went to the Illinois Principal Association conference last week or the week before. I can't remember. Last week, yes. And, you know, it wasn't really the sessions that were the most amazing. It was the conversations in between the sessions with, you know, people that I don't often get a chance to connect with geographically, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah. That's great. I think one of my issues with conferences sometimes is I feel like they're just, and I don't think like the one you went to last week is like this because it's of the type of conference that is, but I think some of them are just big sales pushes. Like
Like,
let me do this conference and let me see how many books I can sell. Let me see how many videos I can sell. Let me see how many whatever I can sell. And they don't always have the best content because they're always looking to push different agenda items. And so I think people just got to be careful. My rule for conferences, what I always tell people is when they're like, well, which conference should I go to? I always tell them, don't look at the conference. Look at who are the actual presenters at the conference. Like, look at that first and look for them. Like, find videos, go online, know what you're going to before you go so that when you get there, you're not disappointed. You know, it's funny. Like when I first started doing this, I got a break in education because I got accepted at the ASCD conference. This was years ago. This was probably like 10 years ago. I was teaching full time and I applied just like anyone else would. And I got accepted and I got a really great time. Right. So they gave me like 1 to 3 o'clock on a Saturday, which was phenomenal. And it was packed. The room was packed. And by the way, I applied like 7 straight years after that. I got denied every year from that. So this is how finicky like these conferences are. And this is when I was getting good. Like, I was actually presenting but my other issue is with most conferences, when they seek presenters, they don't ask to see videos. They just want you to submit a written proposal. And I think that's a huge mistake that a lot of them make, because just because you can do a great written proposal doesn't mean you can deliver a great presentation, right? Those are not mutually like the same. In fact, I know some people who are phenomenal writers and terrible presenters. You know, she's got to be careful.
I've sat through sessions at conferences before where my feet do the talking. If I am having trouble sitting in my chair because not necessarily the content, but the individual delivering the content, you just got to get up and walk out. And it's not with an intent to be rude, but time is precious. You'll never get it back.
And that's true with everything in life. So what you're really saying is if a kid is really bored in a class, they can just walk out. Is that what you're saying?
Well, depends on what school you're in. In a perfect world, they would never walk out. But
they would not, though, right?
No, they wouldn't.
One of my rules is, and I have said this multiple times, when I come to your school to do a staff development day, there are teachers every single time who bring stacks of work with them, right? And look, some places they don't even hide it, right? Some places they just put it right in front of you. And I don't even mind those people. In fact, you know what? I think you should. bring a stack of work. It's not your job to not bring work. It's my job as the presenter to be so good that you don't touch that work while you're there. Like, that's the mindset that I always take into. I actually get excited. I'm like, bring whatever you want. I had a guy, the best one. We got to wrap up in a second. John's going to get mad at me. I'm supposed to say, the best one I ever had was I was doing a workshop in Shenango Valley. It's like the small school district outside of kind of near where I live. And this guy walked in, he was on time. He was, as I was starting though, like comes in last second, he's got a stack of work and he puts it down right in front of me, sits right in the front, puts it down and looks right at me, folds his arms. Like, what are you going to do? And
dare I got
my level of excitement like raised, and I went hard and I used him for every example. And I sat on his desk and I like, yeah. I was all over him. And I was a 2-hour presentation. I'll never forget it. And at the end, he walked over to me and he looked at me and he just nodded and he said, good job. But he didn't touch my work. And I said to him, I posted this on my Facebook. This was over a year ago. I said, I got to take a picture with you. So I took a picture of him and he held the stack of work up. And I had my arm around him and I pointed at it and I said that description. I said, it's not your student's job to not bring extracurricular stuff. It's your job as their teacher to be so incredibly good that they can't help but pay attention to you.
So agree.
Your lesson. But I mean, again, easier said than done in certain situations. But hey, you're the best. It was fun.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. You guys have a good rest of your day.
I can't wait to see you in person at some point.
I know.
Our paths will cross. I'm in Illinois a lot, so I'll wave. I'll keep waving.
Sounds good. All right. See you guys later.
Before we finish today, I just want to do a couple quick shout outs. Thank you to everybody last week on Monday in Newton, Iowa. You guys were amazing, especially Amy. And then, of course, thank you to Jessica Ferguson, Dr. Jessica Ferguson, who will be my guest on my podcast coming up next week. Super excited. Wait till you guys hear her story. Had an awesome dinner with her at Hickory Park in Ames, Iowa. And then had a great day Tuesday with everybody in Colo, Iowa. It was my second day there. We did a bunch of 1.5-hour workshops with all different groups of people, and it was great. I learned a ton from you guys. Thank you so much for having me. Great day also a Friday at APW Central Schools. Meredith, thank you. And of course, everybody, thank you to everybody in Syracuse City School District who brought me in for that 1-hour keynote on Friday. I had a great time. You guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of our podcast. Thank you for rating, subscribing, downloading. Make sure you send me your messages on Twitter. Send me your messages on Instagram. Tweet. Instagram, write me, tag me, put me in your posts, and I will put you on my page. Thank you guys so much for listening. Back next, same time next week. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.